It seems like the wrong week to talk about being in community with those that we disagree with. The confirmation hearings for Judge Kavanaugh have unearthed once again the deep divisions among us, divisions along the line of gender, divisions along the line of use of power, along the lines of he said, she said, reporting sexual assault, getting even, truth, lies, and politics. It's reminded us of all the currents that were flowing around the confirmation hearings for Clarence Thomas, full of all of those divisions, plus the division of race. We live in an ugly time. Those who are not for us are against us and are therefore suspect, wrong, or morally bad. Last month, two of my friends told me that they were taking a break from the Roman Catholic churches where they have worshiped their entire life, and maybe a permanent break. The scandals and the cover-ups have been too much for them. The Me Too and Black Lives Matter movements have ardent supporters and opponents. So do MSNBC and Fox News. I go back and forth between fighting vehemently for my side because I believe I am called to fight for justice and trying to listen to those with whom I disagree because I believe Jesus calls me to be a peacemaker. All that does is give me an acidy stomach and a restless night's sleep. Jonathan Haidt and Brené Brown are among the many authors who are writing to help us find clarity and a way to move forward. Haidt is a professor of ethical leadership at New York University. Some of you participated in last year's study of his book, The Righteous Mind, Why Good People Are Divided by Politics and Religion, and you found that rewarding. I'm going to boil down a very complex book into something more simple than it deserves, but in essence, Haidt challenges our conventional ways of thinking about morality, politics, and religion. He says that as individuals, our morality can be organized into five foundations: the foundation of care, the foundation of fairness, the foundation of loyalty, the foundation of authority, and the foundation of sanctity. Care, fairness, loyalty, authority, and sanctity. A very extensive survey that he conducted showed that people who identify as politically conservative tend to value all five foundations equally. And their most sacred value is preserving the institutions and traditions that sustain a moral community. Those who identify as politically progressive tend to value the care and fairness foundations, and their most sacred value is care for victims of oppression. Haidt does say that most of us have a desire to live morally. It's how we understand morality that differs. That brief recap does a great disservice to this book, so I urge you to read it, preferably with at least one other person. I think he's on to something that could help us take a step back and understand a little bit why we are in the ugly time we find ourselves in now. This summer, on sabbatical, I read Brené Brown's latest book, Braving the Wilderness, The Quest for True Belonging and the Courage to Stand Alone. Dr. Brown is a research professor at the University of Houston, and she has spent the last 16 years studying courage, vulnerability, shame, and empathy. In Braving the Wilderness, Brown looks at the psychological concept of differentiation, how to be a unique self within a community, and how becoming well-differentiated might help us understand those who are unlike us and disagree with us. As she begins, she sets the tone for her book with this quotation from James Baldwin. "I imagine one of the reasons people cling to their hate so stubbornly is because they sense once the hate is gone, they will be forced to deal with the pain." She devotes a chapter to each of these four actions. Number one, people are hard to hate close up, so move in. Number two, speak truth to baloney, except she doesn't use the word baloney, but the word she uses I can't say in church. If I want to keep my job. Number two, speak truth to baloney, be civil. Number three, hold hands with strangers. And number four, strong back, soft front, wild heart. Her premise is, if we are to move forward, away from differences that divide us, toward differences that deepen us, we must be firm in who we are, we must be willing to be vulnerable with others, and we must be courageous enough to listen to those that we disagree with. I would love to be in conversation with anyone else who has read this book, so let me know. Both of these books are really helpful in thinking about conflicts in family, in church, in society, but I've also found that putting their teachings into practice is hard and requires a kind of faithful devotion that I don't have more often than I do have. But we're here in church this morning, so perhaps it would be a good thing to see what our Holy Scripture has to say about all of these things. And I think this story from Mark's Gospel provides another opportunity for understanding. This week's passage follows on the heels of last week's passage when Jesus taught that whoever wants to be first must actually be last and the servant of all, and that whoever welcomes a child welcomes not only the child, but welcomes Jesus and welcomes God. The setting for this week's story is the same. Jesus and the disciples are still in that house in Capernaum, and I imagine that as he's speaking, he is still holding that child in his arms. Holding a child in his arms, he tells the disciples not to fret if someone outside their own cozy little group is doing good things in his name. And holding a child in his arms, he tells them that whoever is not against them is for them. Still holding a child in his arms, he reminds them of the consequences of an immoral life. And holding a child in his arms, he warns them that when tempted to do something immoral, it would be better if they cut off that offending part than harm a little one like that. So taking into account the scripture lesson, and taking into account the teachings of Jonathan Haidt and Brené Brown and so many others, and taking into account all the news that we've dealt with this week, I wonder about two things. Whatever happened to the virtue of humility? And what kind of world are we leaving to our children? I believe excessive pride is at the heart of so much of our trouble. And so I look to some of my personal sages for words of wisdom. I found this by Maya Angelou. Humility comes from inside out. It says, someone was here before me, and I'm here because I've been paid for. I have something to do, and I will do that because I'm paying for someone else who has yet to come. What if every single decision we made were made in humility, with the realization that the people affected by our decision are as equally worthy, valued, and treasured by God as we are? What if every time we recognized that we had received a blessing, we reminded ourselves that it was not received on any of our own accord, but because someone else did something that allowed us to receive that blessing? And what if we walked through our lives with the deep understanding that we are no more important in God's eyes than anyone else? Anyone else. Man. That would be so cool. And man, that would be so hard. Because one way that we differentiate ourselves from others is by judging if we are better or worse than they are. What if we stopped doing that? What if instead of saying, I am Beth, I am better at baking than Greg, but I am not as good at singing as Lori? What if I said instead, I am Beth, I love to bake. And when no one's around, I love to sing at the top of my lungs, and I don't care if it's good or bad. I'm so grateful to Greg when he cleans up after I bake, and I love listening to Lori sing. This summer, our family watched an 8-episode series in a crafting competition called Makin' It, hosted by Amy Poehler and Nick Offerman, who starred in another show our family loved called Parks and Recreation. And in Makin' It, each week, the contestants were given two challenges, a craft challenge that they had to complete in 3 hours and another one that took a couple days. And then at the end of every show, someone would be eliminated because their stuff wasn't as good, wasn't judged to be as good. Near the end of the season, our daughter Sarah said, "Why does anyone have to be eliminated? Everybody is so good. Why can't they just all be on the show for the whole season? What if it's not about competition, but the beauty that is made?" Our children are watching and waiting. I think often about the world that we're leaving them. I think about that in terms of climate change and a national debt in the tens of trillions of dollars, and political divisions that I fear will take generations to mend. I wonder if when our children are adults, if our society will be more or less polarized. I have hope that when our children are adults, our nation will have a better sense of racial equity and what individual and institutional racism look like, and I pray to God that there are more women in leadership when our children are adults. But even if all of these events happen, what will our children know about Jesus? Will they know that the best decisions that we made were not based on our political leanings and not based on whatever morality foundation we favor? Will they know that our best decisions were made because we know that Jesus said the greatest commandment was to love God and to love neighbor as self? You all have stuck with me through a sermon that's a little bit dense, and I appreciate that. For those who have wandered off, no problem, I would have too. Not as I was actually giving it, though. That would be bad. There's a reason I have a manuscript here. I'd like to attempt a summation that might give you something to think about this week or something to act on. Jesus taught many things. He taught that we are to love, that we are not to judge, and that we are to live in service to others. He also taught that we who are grown up, who have some power because we are grown up or for other reasons, have a responsibility to care for those who are not grown up and do not have such power. We have a responsibility to them. We have a responsibility to each other. Jesus never dehumanized anyone. The one time he called a woman a dog, which he did, he immediately atoned for the insult. We have a responsibility to give each other a fair hearing and not to dismiss each other out of hand for whatever reason they are not like us. We also have a responsibility to ourselves to act morally in faith. If we're tempted to behave in an immoral way, to abuse our power, to take advantage of the weak, to be violent, to hoard wealth or opportunity, we must be ruthless with ourselves to stop that behavior. Jesus calls us to live as humble servants in all that we do, and that's hard. Maya Angelou said, "What I pray for is humility, to know that there is something greater than I. And I have to know that the brute, the bigot, and the batterer are all children of God, whether they know it or not. And I'm supposed to treat them accordingly, and it's hard. And I blow it all the time." We live in an ugly time. Most of us want to add some beauty to the world, a beauty that is based in love, but that is hard. And we blow it all the time. But the good news is that we believe in a God who loves to give second chances to you, to me, to us, to them. Thanks be to God.